It's Thursday, February 18th. It's been a year. What's an extra month or four? We start here. In a baffling shift to its timeline, the Biden administration now says many Americans won't be able to think about getting vaccinated until late summer.
They might only have 2 million doses when they first get authorized.
What's causing the delay? Well, problems at vaccine factories aren't helping. They were expecting rolling blackouts. Well, lots of Texans are still ready to roll.
Right when it goes on, it's go mode.
With a phone and a candle, one resident tells us what it's like to sit in darkness for days. And there are lots of voices on the radio. Very few of them become calls to action.
Rush is irreplaceable, unique.
Why Rush Limbaugh is still shaping politics even after his death. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
Hello, hello, hello. Since I'm socially distanced, I'm allowed to take my mask off, they tell me.
Before Joe Biden was President Biden, he ran his campaign on a simple platform. We're going to get the government working again. It's going to do stuff. It's going to do it right without all the drama.
Well, experts say that if he had acted just 1 week sooner, 36,000 people would have been saved.
Obviously, the place where government was failing the most was keeping Americans from getting COVID-19. Besides telling people over and over to wear a mask, the big turning point would just have to come in the form of vaccines. And as he took office, his administration told Americans the vaccine is on its way faster than you can imagine.
Roughly when do you think anyone wants one would be able to get it? Is it summer? Is it?
Oh, I know. I think it'll be this spring. I think we'll be able to do that this spring.
That is President Biden on January 25th. The next day, the 26th, Dr. Anthony Fauci answers that same question. When will basically anyone on the street be able to procure a vaccine?
I would imagine by the time we get to April, that will be what I would call, for better wording, open season.
Flash forward to this week.
When vaccine would be more widely available to the general population? I was hoping that that would be by the end of April.
This time on CNN, Fauci's timeline is slipping.
So that timeline will probably be prolonged maybe into mid to late May and early June.
Later that night, this was Wednesday night, President Biden did a town hall.
When is every American who wants it going to be able to get a vaccine?
By the end of July of this year.
With that head-spinning statement, yesterday, you saw a White House in perhaps its most defensive posture so far, defending a timeline that is getting murkier and murkier. So let's bring in someone who can offer a little bit of clarity. ABC's Sony Salzman is with our medical unit. She's dedicated to the vaccine beat. That is what she studies all day, every day. Sony, what's going on?
Yeah, it is confusing, I would say. This shifting timeline, it does keep slipping further and further back. And the ultimate question here is, when are we going to be able to return to life as normal? And I don't think anyone, including the Biden administration, really knows that for sure.
When do we expect that there will be enough doses for everyone who wants a vaccine to be able to get one?
When it comes to these vaccine doses, there are so many things going on.
We announced last week that he would be purchasing, that the federal government would be purchasing enough doses to vaccinate 300 million Americans. So he reiterated that last night. We will get the last shipment of those doses the end of July.
By the good news here is that the government has enough contracts for enough vaccines for the entire population. Now, the question is, when are those vaccines going to be available and when are they going to be in our communities? And that's where it gets more complicated. So manufacturing in and of itself is a complex science. Sometimes these manufacturers think that they have their production targets, but they brew up a whole batch of vaccine, they test it, it's not up to quality. They have to throw the whole thing away.
Not only are the vaccination sites in 34 states shutting down because of the weather, but the main distribution hub for FedEx in Memphis, along with UPS's in Louisville, they are both getting hit by this storm, and that could have a ripple effect across the country.
There's been issues getting the vaccine out of warehouses into the communities. There's been storms. There's been weather. All of these things combined can lead to these delays and result in these slipping of timelines that we're seeing.
Governor, you look at this, it's impressive. But yeah. Why does California need the federal government's help?
I mean, we can use all the support we can. At the end of the day, supply is our biggest issue. And this,
we have seen states and governors and mayors announce these big mega vaccination sites. We've seen CVS and Walgreens say they're coming online. So there are now many places Americans can go to get a vaccine in theory. The problem is that you need supply in those locations for people to actually get shots in arms.
The next few weeks are going to be stubborn, perhaps more frustration, not less, because the allocations are pretty consistent. They're not growing, but anxiety is growing and people's desire and demands are increasing.
So it's not a matter of a lack of places for people to get vaccines. Anyone can walk to a Walgreens. It's a matter of getting enough doses to that Walgreens so that when people show up, it's readily available.
And one of the things that Dr. Anthony Fauci said this week was, hey, we are actually counting on like 100 million doses from Johnson & Johnson, like a third vaccine maker. And yet they're kind of late on delivering their vaccine. Is that going to be the issue going forward, that these vaccine companies are actually late on the jump with what they promised?
You know, the deal was done with Johnson & Johnson under the prior administration. And as across the last few weeks, we've learned that there is not a big inventory.
So New York Times reported last month that Johnson & Johnson was having some problems with their production, which is totally understandable. Scaling up a vaccine is really hard.
So I want to be clear that Johnson & Johnson has a 100 million commitment for the end of June of doses.
What we know now is that Johnson & Johnson has committed to having 100 million doses to the American public, but they might only have 2 million doses when they first get authorized, which we're anticipating later this month or early next month. So that
Wait,
kind
two,
of
2 million, that's a long way from 100
yeah,
million.
It is. It is a long way from 100 million, but I think it kind of illustrates some of the challenges and the kinks that need to be worked out when you're talking about scaling up to millions and millions of doses. You know, the science of manufacturing is actually really complex. It's one thing to make a couple hundred thousand doses that you want to use in your clinical trial. It's another thing to vaccinate the entire world. And it's actually, you have to bring in a whole different set of scientists that specialize in the science of scaling up big batches of medicine. It's very precise. And sometimes there can be problems that crop up along the way. I would rather that a pharmaceutical company like fess up to having manufactured a batch that isn't up to standards and throw it away and have a supply delay, then have, God forbid, a bad batch get out there and hurt people.
All right. Sony Salzman with ABC's Medical Unit. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
When the power plants went offline and the natural gas lines froze and the wind turbines stopped turning, it created an immediate crisis for much of the state of Texas. Because here you've got an independent energy grid, basically incapable of borrowing electricity from other states. You've got a system that is being knocked out by the cold, and yet because it's so cold, electricity is the main thing people need to stay safe.
Houston, America's fourth largest city, is telling residents to boil water if they even have any.
How can we boil water? We don't even have power.
And in Galveston,
a crowded aisle is the water aisle, but there's not any more.
Many without power and water.
Everything in the refrigerator now has gone bad.
So what do you do? Well, you can institute a thing called rolling blackouts, where you turn on power to some people, then you turn it off, you give it to other folks, just keep everything from getting overloaded. The problem is, certain places you can't turn off. Hospitals, fire stations. And so for many customers, rolling blackouts quickly just gave way to blackouts.
ERCOT stands for Electric Reliability Council of Texas. And they showed that they were not reliable.
Do you think ERCOT leadership needs to resign?
Yes.
We've managed to find someone who's still got some juice on their phone. James Ryan, 22-year-old in the Houston area. He's actually the son of one of our Dallas correspondents, Jim Ryan. James, I'm seeing you on Zoom right now. It looks like your power is still out. I mean, are you being lit by, is that candlelight?
Yeah, so currently I have a few candles going right now for just to see. And it gets dark earlier than normal. Monday evening, there was a about an hour to 2 hour window that I was able to use electricity and use water. But since Monday evening, my power has been completely out, and I haven't had running water. So Last night, I was able to seek refuge at some family's house in West Houston, and they didn't have power either, but they did have a fireplace for me to sleep next to. So you take what you can get.
Wait, so since Monday, like when I hear rolling blackouts, I think, you know, 4 hours on, but then there's 6 hours off. Whatever. You're saying you haven't had power and therefore you haven't had running water for three straight days.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I that's kind of the understanding that I had as well. And it's really a guess as to when you're going to get power, how long it's going to stay on. And, you know, you don't know when the next time it's going to be is. So you really have to prepare in those right when it goes on, it's go mode. You need to start, you know, filling your tub with water. You need to, charge your portable devices that can, you know, help you through and like laptops, those hold a lot of charge and they can charge your cell phone multiple times.
Millions without power, families left to wear multiple layers and huddle with one another just to get through these nights.
They can see their breath inside of their homes, and they're really worried about their pipes.
So Austin Water asking customers to turn off your faucets. Don't drip them now to try and preserve water pressure.
So my girlfriend lives in North Austin in a town called Pflugerville. It's just a suburb of Austin, in an apartment complex by herself, one bedroom. And she has been dealing with days where her thermostat will read 40 degrees during the daytime. And then at nighttime, it'll just read low, meaning that it's below 40 degrees, either 30 or 20 degrees. So her biggest concern right now is just maintaining heat, trying to get warm and stay warm through the night. Her water is out as well.
Pipes bursting in Austin, water cascading out of buildings, and icy roads sending vehicles sliding down the street.
So not only is she dealing with the cold and lack of food and water, she has COVID on top of this. She was diagnosed with COVID about a week ago. So she's been in quarantine. She didn't have the time or the resources ready to prepare for this this event. So not only does she have COVID and she's cold, she can't seek refuge without exposing somebody to COVID. And she is making it through by, she deconstructed her couch in her living room and basically set up a pallet in her bathroom to try to, you know, get in a small space to conserve heat.
Wait, what's the couch for? Is that just to like barricade against the cold outside the bathroom?
Just a little bit more insulation and a place for her to, you know, lie down without, you know, being on her couch or being in her bed. Just some kind of structure in there with her.
Oh.
So she can see her breath. She is, you know, absolutely feeling the mental effects of isolation because she was quarantined for COVID, and now she's going through this alone.
Well, and so does it seem like everyone's in the same boat, James, or are there certain areas or like certain parts of the grid that are getting their power on more consistently or that are still sitting in darkness?
Yeah.
Like you?
Well, I'll tell you right now, the most frustrating thing, I'll actually show you. So,
okay, so we're moving.
This is my apartment. I'm on the third floor. Okay. This is my view of downtown Houston, okay?
Right, you're showing me the view from your balcony, right? This is the Houston skyline.
Correct. So it's kind of cloudy right now. Normally, there's big buildings right here. And every night since my power has been out, downtown Houston has had this beautiful, brightly lit up, you know, display with their LEDs going for, you know, red for Valentine's Day. And right. And all of this stuff that just seems, it seems so great. Why is all of this power being allocated to the downtown area? It's nighttime. There are office buildings and there are neighborhoods completely enclosing the downtown area that do not have power. And I was one of those people. And I was very displeased with how that was being handled.
another night there with millions without power, without heat, without water, and authorities acknowledging they do not know when the power will be back on.
When nighttime comes around, it's almost like actually survival mode kind of. It's actually pretty frightening.
We're just running around looking for a hotel at this point, trying to get me and my kids out of the cold.
We have seen families, for example, who have gotten in their cars and used their cars as heaters and have died because of carbon monoxide poison.
You don't know what the night is going to bring. And if you don't have a gas-powered fireplace, which not many people have that luxury, then it's really scary.
Right. Yeah, I believe it. I mean, we've heard, you know, from hospitals to security systems, just so many vital systems going without power right now, including residents keeping themselves warm with fires and couch cushions. James Ryan there in Houston. Good luck. Good luck to your girlfriend. Stay safe.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time.
Next up on Start Here, Rush Limbaugh has died. The Rush Limbaugh effect is very much living on. We're back after the break.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Yesterday, we learned that perhaps one of the most important people in modern American politics has died. And this is not someone who's ever held elected office.
They say we're divisive, but we're not divisive. We're defending an America that has strayed from our founding.
Rush Limbaugh died yesterday from complications of lung cancer at the age of 70. And while plenty of media sensations become famous for how they bring a culture together, Limbaugh was really defined by his brashness, by his divisiveness. And in doing so, he shaped a lot more than some radio airwaves. We've got Nicole Hemmer here. She's a historian at Columbia University. She's also the author of the book Messengers of the Right. She has documented Limbaugh extensively over the years. Nicole, I mean, I thought the most telling thing yesterday was, you know, President Trump has not given many interviews as ex-president. Well, moments after this news broke, he was there on Fox specifically to talk about Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, it's a remarkable moment, and it underscores just how important Rush Limbaugh was to the Trump presidency.
Because, you know, that famous escalator ride was the very beginning. And he was one of the people that said we were going to win.
So much attention has been paid to the role of Fox News in the Trump presidency. But really, Rush Limbaugh was an early advocate of Trump.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists.
And some of them may be good people, but they're just bad people. And we don't need them. And it resonated. That's going to resonate. There's a whole bunch of people, just like Perot resonated.
He supported him throughout. He helped spread many of the conspiracy theories that fueled the Trump presidency.
It looks like
The coronavirus being weaponized as yet another element to bring down Donald Trump.
Remember back in October when Donald Trump was diagnosed with COVID-19, Rush Limbaugh turned over his microphone for 2 hours to Donald Trump so he could hold a radio rally.
Well, Rush, this is the I appreciate that very much. It's an honor.
I mean it bottom of my heart, sir.
I know you do. And this is the most important election that we've ever had.
Rush Limbaugh, thank you for your decades of tireless devotion to our country.
And of course, Trump had already awarded him the Medal of Freedom during the State of the Union address. So this was a mutually beneficial relationship.
Well, and even beyond Donald Trump, like, can you talk to me for a second about how Rush Limbaugh changed the game? Because, like, there have been lots of shock jocks and political commentators on radios, and yet they are not seen as kingmakers. They're not seen as guiding an entire political party. How did his legacy become so different?
His legacy is different because of his relationship to politics. Don Imus and Howard Stern were not people who were fundamentally transforming the American political scene, but Rush Limbaugh was.
The opinions expressed on the Rush Limbaugh program do not necessarily reflect those of WABC Radio.
He becomes a nationally syndicated radio host in 1988.
By the way, that's a gutless disclaimer. The views expressed by the host on this show ought to become federal law, and the station and sponsors ought to heartily endorse them.
And by 1992, he's sleeping over at the White House because George H.W. Bush believes that he is the key to winning conservatives and therefore winning the Republican nomination and the 1992 election.
Well, if Bush wins, I'm afraid that the thing I will hear on the radio tomorrow is his statement of a mandate from the people to continue what he has been doing, which I view as tax, spend, and regulate.
That's not what you're going to hear tomorrow. That's not what you're going to hear. You know what you're going to hear if Bush wins? I'll tell you, keep the sharp knives and objects away from the media.
And from that moment on, Republican politicians treat him like a kingmaker.
I am in Congress today because of Rush Limbaugh.
There's a lot of appreciation and a lot of love for what you're doing out there.
Well, Rush, thank you so much. Thank you for that.
President George W. Bush calling to congratulate you on 20 years of important and excellent broadcasting.
Well, thank you, sir. You've stunned me.
Why? Like, what was his connection with voters, with average listeners, that made him so that, like, they were like, no, he represents all of us?
Because there'd been nothing like him before.
My dogs have created more shovel-ready work than Obama has.
It really was one of the first nationally syndicated shows because of technological changes in the 1980s. And, you know, I mentioned he comes on the scene in 1988. By 1992, he has two best-selling books. He's starting up a television program.
Laughter is also good for you as long as you don't inhale. So
he's somebody who they didn't have any context for. All they knew was here was this wildly popular conservative, clearly the most popular conservative in the United States now that Reagan had left the White House. And it seemed like he could command millions of voters. And if he could, he had become a player. And so by treating him as a kingmaker, they kind of made him one.
It doesn't look like Michelle Obama follows her own nutritionary dietary advice.
You're a foreigner. Shut your mouth or get out. And if you come here illegally, you're going to jail.
How many of you guys, in your own experience with women, have learned that no means yes if you know how to spot it?
The thing to understand about Rush Limbaugh is that he was a controversial figure. He was somebody who engaged in all sorts of racist and sexist and homophobic language.
If any race of people should not have guilt about slavery, it's Caucasians. The way this can all be worked out, Clyburn's new position, driving Miss Nancy.
He's somebody who attacked victims of HIV/AIDS. He's somebody who called women feminazis and called women reporters infobabes.
Feminism was established so as to allow unattractive women easier access to the mainstream of society.
Outrage was part of the appeal for his listeners, but was constantly generating controversy that could cause problems for Republicans.
I don't know what's in Rush Limbaugh's heart, so I'm not going to comment on the sincerity of his apology.
So take this moment in 2012 when Sandra Fluke, this Georgetown University student, testifies before Congress about contraception access.
She must be paid to have sex. What does that make her? It makes her a slut, right?
He says she owes the American people a sex tape to pay them back for paying for her contraception. And it happens in the middle of the 2012 election when Mitt Romney is trying to prove that he's not engaged in a war against women.
It's not the language I would have used. I'm focusing on the issues that I think are significant in the country today.
And that kind of hesitance on the part of Republicans to criticize Limbaugh really began to show what a gap there was between Limbaugh's audience and politics outside of the conservative media ecosystem.
Rush is irreplaceable, unique. He had an audience that was massive.
You're not angry. You love people. You want your country to be the greatest it can be. And you finally got somebody willing to help you do it.
Well, so then I guess I wonder, as the country, you know, moves on in the years to come, is Rush Limbaugh something from the radio era? You know, back then when, you know, talk radio was, we think of it often, I think, as like a 90s thing. But whether it's a different mode of media or just different personalities, is Limbaughism going to just forever be a part of what we're seeing in the Republican Party right now?
So I think radio gets overlooked. Like I said, we talk about Fox News all the time, but we don't talk about conservative talk radio. Millions more people listen to talk radio than watch Fox News, just millions upon millions. It will continue. It won't have Rush Limbaugh as its core. Conservatives are starting to move more into podcasts as well. But there are so many Limbaugh imitators out there. There are dozens of three-hour-a-day national call-in radio shows on the right, and they have huge audiences and they make tons of money. So even with Rush Limbaugh gone, they are going to remain.
I was going to say the unmistakable connection with the audience in a way that you could wield that in the real world, not just on your show, but way beyond the realm of radio, what set him apart and continues to have its reverberations today. All right, Nicole Hemmer, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Release and liftoff. As the countdown to Mars continues, the perseverance of humanity launching the next generation of robotic explorers to the Red Planet.
And one last thing. The mission takes years, but later today, scientists will be facing sheer panic for about 7 minutes.
This is very dangerous walk.
So it's incredibly dangerous in that we are coming in so fast. You come in at 12,000 miles an hour, and we have to slow down to less than 2 miles an hour in 7 minutes.
That is how long it takes a spacecraft to descend to the surface of Mars. Because it's such a complicated process, it's entirely automated. You hit a button here on Earth. 7 minutes later, the rover known as Perseverance will either safely be on the ground or not. Half the missions that have attempted this have failed.
Perseverance rover will land at a location called Jezero Crater.
If it arrives in one piece, that's when the Perseverance mission really begins. It's there to specifically look for signs of ancient life. It's landing near what used to be a delta where water, yes, water, flowed into what is now a crater the size of Lake Tahoe.
We're going to be taking microphones with us. For the first time, we're going to have that human sense on another planet.
There are several other features setting it apart from its cousin, Curiosity. You might remember that one's already there. Perseverance is outfitted with its own drone, which will become the first aircraft to fly around the Martian atmosphere. It's got equipment that can actually gather samples, like rocks.
We're going to seal it in its own individual tube. We set them on the surface.
And that is because NASA is hoping in a few years it will launch another spacecraft, this time capable of making round-trip missions, bringing back those Martian rocks, along with perhaps the first proof of extraterrestrial life.
While I'm sitting there, I am just going to be crossing my fingers and hoping.
And by the way, if those 7 minutes are scary, remember, it takes about 12 minutes for radio waves to make their way to and from the Earth, meaning overall, it'll be about a half an hour of terror between hitting that button and knowing what the next year may hold. That all gets underway today around 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can watch this all unfold live on ABC News Live. I'm Brad Bilkey. See you tomorrow.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.